Good day to you, everyone, and welcome back to Beyond the Rock podcast. I'm your host, Emily Hernandez, and my co-host Jeremy and I are excited to bring you today's episode. If you're a new listener, thank you so much for joining us, and if you're a longtime supporter wondering where the hell we've been, well, that's my fault. When I've taken a couple weeks off from editing, it can be really hard to get back in the swing of things, so for that I apologize profusely. For those who don't know me, I'm a small business owner here in Austin, Texas, and I'm very involved in the climbing community. Oh, and I'm getting married at the end of this year, and we're looking for a house. What? Yeah, we are getting married. Now, those are not excuses. They're just examples as to why I need to manage my time better. I don't know if any of you have dealt with that same problem, but it seems to really plague me. And let's be real, time goes by so quickly when you're an adult, COVID or not. That's why my unsolicited advice is to mind how you are spending yours. I firmly believe we need to spend our time with those who deserve it, as well as doing things that benefit our lives and not take away from them. I mean, time is that one thing we can't get back, right? Right. Okay, I am not sure why I decided to open up with an Emilyism, but who knows? That may be a new start to our show. Guess you'll have to stay tuned to find out. But let's get into why you came here today, right? All right. Our guest is competitive rock climber and Austin native, Maya Madair. So check it out and let us know what you think. Hey, Maya, how you doing today?
Doing pretty well. Just got back from APP.
Nice.
How about you guys?
I just got back. Yeah, I just got back from, and I was doing a little bit of work down there. Jeremy, what have you been doing this weekend?
Well, yesterday I just tried to stay out of the snow. the heck was that about? And today was just work, really. How's things going over APP? You haven't been there in a year. Crazy.
I don't know.
That was
You know, go ahead, Maya.
Oh, I was just gonna comment on the snow. I think that's the first time it snowed here in like a very significant number of years. Like I feel like I was like 11 last time it snowed in Austin.
Yeah, I mean I feel like it snowed recently, but I could be wrong. But not like that. Like it just like there's a little dust on the ground and then it's over.
Yeah, for our audience who does not pay attention to the South Texas forecast, snow is usually not in it. And it just so happens that we literally had snow on the ground, would you say a couple inches? Jeremy, you're in Cedar Park, right?
Yeah, some places reported 6 inches. We got about 2 or 3.
Six inches is a lot. We had like, I mean, people were scraping snow off cars in my neighborhood, but there were snowmans in the yards and stuff. Snowmen, I guess.
Yeah.
Snow people. Yes, for sure.
There was enough snow that they had made a snowman, but I couldn't figure out where they'd gotten the snow from.
Yeah.
By the time I saw it, so it had filled back in. So.
Well, super. Well, Maya, Jeremy and I do know you. I officially met you a couple weeks ago, but for our audience who does not, do you mind giving a short intro and a little bit about what it is you do on planet Earth?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Maya. And basically, I really like to rock climb. I'm also in school at Stanford doing computer science. I compete in rock climbing, not computer science, a lot. Not right now, obviously, because there's no competitions. But I've been doing it for about 9 years. And I grew up climbing in Austin at Austin Rock Gym, which to me was like the OG climbing location here, even though I know there was a couple before my time. But yeah. Just kind of grown up in the sport and kind of dragged my whole family into it too. So yeah, that's basically what I do. I just climb.
So Austin Rock Gym actually had two locations. One was considered South Austin Rock Gym and then North Austin Rock Gym. Do you recall the year that South Austin Rock Gym closed?
Yeah, it was really sad. Everybody was upset. I guess it was, you know, a combination of like the new competition coming up, but mostly it was like a leasing thing. The person who owned the building they were in sold their lease to somebody else in like that short period of before they could like renew it.
Renew it
the next year. It was tragic. I was very sad. I remember we had like a farewell party for Sarg. Everyone was there all climbing in melancholy.
Yeah, I actually was there the weekend before it closed and didn't know it was closing. So it was news to me. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why I'm sharing this is because that's where I saw you the first time in a non-creepy way. I was watching you.
I was probably like 14.
You were young. And you're how old now?
Now I'm 21. I'm about to turn 22.
Okay. So I saw the younger version of Maya, and a couple things caught my eye, if you don't mind me jumping on your bandwagon.
Sure, yeah.
Real quick. So for those who haven't seen photos or video of Maya, Maya walks tall. She has a lot of strength in the way she stands, the way she holds herself, but also the way that you climb Maya is extremely precise and methodical. So here I'm seeing this teenager that's traversing across the entire gym. And I'm thinking, how the hell does she have the strength to do that? And someone explained to me that you're a competition climber. I said, okay. Well, that makes sense. And then I ended up going to a competition that you were at Crux Climbing Center a couple of years ago, which is in Austin as well. And I saw you competing against Alex Fuzio. It was just so neat to see a hometown climber, you know, on that platform. And I was screaming so loud for you because I connected the dots. And it's just really neat, full circle. I see that you were training for the 2024 Olympics and that you prefer competition climbing over outdoor climbing.
Well, at that point, I can't say that I prefer it over outdoor climbing. It's okay. Definitely a whole different, like it's a different sport.
Okay. Talk to us about that.
At some point, I was so focused on comps that I didn't care too much for outdoor climbing, and it's been very much time doing it, but I've gotten a lot more into it lately. So I appreciate like both comps and outdoor climbing in their own right. It's not like a one over the other type thing. I do train more for comps, but just because I think it's more competitive, obviously.
And you have a competitive spirit, would you say?
Yeah, I love competing. I think I'm a much better competitor than I am a climber.
Okay. How so?
I mean, I do really well in competition, but I am actually not, I'm not the best climber on the circuit, but I'm a good competitor. So my competition results outpace like my actual climbing skill.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make, yeah.
Yep.
It absolutely does. And do you come from a competitive family?
Yeah. My whole family kind of has like a competitive edge. I think especially my mom. My dad is very innovative. He's been part of a lot of startup companies, but neither of my parents are really involved in anything like any competitive like activities or sports. I think they just, you know, friendly competition has always been a thing in my family. We do a lot of sports together, and like me and my siblings are always kind of competitive with each other. So I think, yeah, you come from a competitive family, but in a good way.
Right on. Did you decide on your own to train for the 2024 Olympics, or did you have a coach that encouraged you to, or what does that road even look like?
It honestly mostly looks like a pipe dream. I am not intending to, you know, like I'm not pursuing it with any laboring under any illusions that I'm actually going to end up going. I just think it's a cool like reach goal to have, you know, like kind of when you like apply to colleges and you apply to like two or three that you're pretty sure you're going to get into, one that you're definitely going to get into, and then one that you're like, oh, I probably won't get in, but like it'd be cool if I did, you know, might as well apply. So for me, that's what the Olympics is kind of like. Realistically, I want to be able to like do some international competitions in the next few years, but I might as well periodize my training with 2024 in mind, because who's to say what's going to happen? And there's a few years until then, so chances slim, but it's there. So I think of it more like a reach goal, not something that I have a real specific plan on how I want to try to go after it.
And 2024 is a good year to go to the Olympics because they split it, right? So you don't have to speed climb.
Yeah, I'm not a speed climber, and I will never be a speed climber.
What?
So.
You don't think that that's a sport? No.
I mean, it's a
sport. No, actually, speed climbing is really legit. The people who are good at it are extremely competent athletes. It's just a totally unique skill set from climbing. Yeah. I could never be a speed climber because I don't have that skill set. And I would, you know, it takes ridiculous amount of training and it's extremely repetitive. So to do it, it's like running. You have to do it all the time and you have to do it over and over. And people that do that often specialize in speed because it's really hard to train for all three at once.
So do you have any idea how a climber or have your friends explained to you why they would choose speed climbing instead of focusing on a more traditional form, bouldering or sport climbing?
I mean, I feel like everyone just has a different thing that they do. I know some people who are elite speed climbers and it's just like any other sport, you know, they start doing it and you're like, wow, I really like this and just keep doing it and get good at it. I mean, ultimately it's still climbing. It's just another discipline.
It's kind of climbing.
It's the need for speed. No, it most certainly is. Speed climbing is definitely its own, you're exactly right, discipline of the sport. I think I may just be seeing it through a lens of envy because I know that in no way, shape, or form, literally and figuratively, could I hop on and even manage a quarter of that.
For sure, yeah. I actually didn't realize until they did the thing on Real Rock, like how popular it was and like, in Europe and, well, Western Europe, I guess, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, it's had, recently there's been like kind of a surge of popularity because of the Olympics. I think previously, you know, there's a lot of people who either specialize in both sport and bouldering or just speed climbing. And so since you get like twice the bang for your buck training for sport and bouldering, I think a lot more people did that. Yeah. And I mean, also it's more traditional and like it's easier to train for. Like you can't train for speed climbing unless you have a regulation 50 meter speed wall where you live. And there's just not that many of those, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it has become much more popular in the past few years because people started building those in preparation for the Olympics. And then also, I don't know, climbing as a sport is getting bigger. And so of course it's going to diversify a little and people are going to start finding new things to do with it or, you know, exploring the less popular things to do with it.
I think speed climbing is easier for people to understand. It's like me watching gymnastics. Like, I don't know why something's hard or, I mean, it all looks hard to me. Same thing with climbing. Like, if you're not a climber, you don't know why this move is harder than that move, you know?
Yeah, speed climbing is a very spectator-friendly sport. It's so fast and, like, you know, high adrenaline, high engagement. It's like, it's obvious who won. Internationally, like, the personalities in speed climbing are, like, way more, you know, traditional sports, like, showy. You know, I don't know if you know who Reza is from Iran, I think. But
I know, yeah.
Like, he's a meme, you know, like he's like a huge personality. It's like really, you know, cheesing it up for the cameras and stuff. And there's not a lot of climbers in traditional rock climbing that do that.
You two make very good points in the fact that speed climbing is very much a spectator sport. But for me, when a lot of people hear that I climb and they are not familiar with climbing, a lot of times I'll ask, so when you're out there, is it just who gets to the top first or how does that work?
Yeah. Classic Gumby question.
Right. So with you being a longtime climber, what are some of the questions that you've gotten from the general public that you just kind of have to take a breath and answer kindly because it's just, I don't want to say ignorant because that's a little harsh, but you don't know what you don't know. So what are some of them?
I mean, yeah, the like, okay, how does scoring work? A lot of people don't know how scoring works. So like, oh, like what does a competition mean? Like, is it who gets to the top faster? Funny story, when I was in high school, I feel like there was a lot of the high school boys that would be like trying to like, do you think I could do that? Like, I think I could probably do that. Like, how many pull-ups can you do? You know, like, I don't know. It's just funny. Like people don't understand the, like how skill-based it is, I guess, and tend to focus a lot more on like the strength and like, you know, I guess it's common for people who don't climb to like try to, you know, decide what level they're going to enter the sport at and like predict like, oh, I can probably climb at like an intermediate level right off the couch because I'm really strong because I lift weights or whatever. It's very skill-based, actually. I'm sure you guys know. And obviously strength is not the sole factor that determines how good you're going to be at it. And then I guess I've had people, this has never happened to me, but I've had people tell me that people saw them climbing outside and told them like, you know, there's an easier way up over around the back. You can just walk up. Yep. Sometimes I get asked a lot about what my gear is, like, what are crash pads, like hikers, like, is that a mattress? You camping?
Why do you have that mattress on your back?
Yep. Yeah, but I think that people nowadays, like, I haven't had something like that happen to me in a really long time. I think the general public is a lot more aware of, like, what climbing is and what climbers look like and what the stuff that we have is, so.
Speaking of, like, people staying, you know, is there an easier way up? We were at McKinney one time and a buddy was climbing and a guy ran over to try to give him a hand. Thought he was, like, stuck down there or something. And I'm like, we're all like, don't touch him, don't touch him. He's about to send.
So. Don't touch him. That's so funny.
Dab, no.
I mean, I definitely would have called him for a dab if someone would have helped him.
So Maya, would you consider yourself more of a boulder? Is that your discipline that you prefer?
So until very recently, yeah, I've always been more of a boulderer, and it's partly because I naturally just like it more, or have liked it more historically. And it's partially because, you know, we have 3 great bouldering gyms in Austin. And, or I guess 4 now, 4 great bouldering gyms in Austin and no sport climbing to speak of. And, you know, without endurance, it's really hard to just go outside and hop on sport route. So I didn't really have much interest in doing it because I couldn't train it. But recently, like since I moved to California for school, obviously I'm back now, but pre-COVID, when I was in California for school, I had a lot more opportunities to train for sport climbing. And then I had a series of events happen to me where I forgot to sign up for Bouldering Nationals. I injured my back, so I wasn't allowed to fall for a few months. And I just, yeah, I had better sport climbing both outside and in gyms around where I was living. And all of these happened at like kind of different times, but over the past few years. And I actually got a lot more into sport climbing, especially in the past year. I basically did nothing but sport climbing because I couldn't fall. So I would say now that I'm pretty much equally psyched. Most of my recent climbing trips have been sport climbing. Gosh, I don't even know when the last time I bouldered outside was, but I think that it's nice to be able to have both because you can train sport for a while and you feel like you're plateauing or you're kind of done and bored and you want to switch back, you go back to bouldering. And then I also think training endurance helps your bouldering and training power helps sport climbing. So it's kind of like a more complete, like a more well-rounded way to train is to do both. Maybe not at the same time, but just as long as you're building components of both into your training.
Yeah, they do complement each other for sure, for the exact reasons that you stated. And circling back to a couple things that you just mentioned, number one, what pops in my head is accessibility. So I think I know you make a great point about the lack of accessibility for sport climbing in South Texas. I mean, it's here. It's
right. Yeah. I mean, there is some good outdoor sport climbing. It's just not good.
We have it. For sure. Ropes. For sure. Yeah. And do you think that that's a limiting factor for people who want to get exposed to the outdoors? Let's say people in Houston or people that are landlocked in Kansas. Do you think that we would have more climbers if
we had more rock? Yeah, sure.
There was more.
I mean, more rock, more gyms, more opportunities are always going to make more people climb. I also think, you know, there's a lot of climbers in Texas, weirdly. And it's partially like the youth team infrastructure that gets people into it. And then it's partially like colleges, like if there's a big climbing community in colleges, a lot of people get into it. And then also just like the commercial bouldering gyms, there's been a pretty big boom in the climbing population in Austin of late, which is cool, but also demand sometimes outpaces the space that we have. And then they all move to Colorado because they want to climb, you know.
Better California.
I mean, yeah, that's what I did. I went to California. So people leave places that don't have really great rock because they're looking for better rock. And maybe they come back.
Because they have the people I know that are your age that I climb with are talking about moving to Colorado. So
yeah, a lot of people move to Colorado.
Oh yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Jeremy.
I said have fun paying state income tax.
Wait, isn't that California or is it Colorado as well?
I think they both do. Most states have income tax, just not Texas and Florida.
All right. Taxes. All right. I don't think we've touched on that.
Just adult problems.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah.
We have 3 different decades of age. We got a 40s, 30s, and 20s. I like this variation in our voices.
You see what I'm worried about, paying taxes more than the, you know, rock. I got a lifetime of pain at McKinney to worry about.
And sorry to circle back. Actually, I'm not sorry, but to circle back again, Maya, when you were mentioning the sport climbing scenarios, can you explain why you weren't able to fall for a while and had to focus on
Oh, yeah. I had, so my family windsurfs. We spend the summers in this little town called Hood River that's on the Columbia River in the northern part of Oregon. Anyway, background information, but I was windsurfing and it was really stupid. I was just like adjusting some gear. I like leaned over and I just like tweaked my back somehow. And I guess it was like an underlying problem. And that was like the last straw, because I've had back pain for a really long time. But I finally got an MRI after, you know, years of just, you know, I probably just need to do more core. And I got an MRI and they're like, yeah, so you have two bulging discs and arthritis. And I was like, great. So yeah, 2020 was like a rough year for me injury wise. My main problem was that when they told me, okay, you really can't sustain any spinal impact for the next 3 months, I said, what are you talking about? I'm a rock climber and I kept on bouldering and falling on it. And then it got a lot worse. And then I really couldn't boulder for 3 months. And it's on the mend now. So I'm able to fall a bit, but that was definitely a factor. I was really planning on devoting fall to mostly bouldering training in preparation for, I guess, the 2021 season, whenever that ends up happening, or if it does. But I ended up just doing a lot of sport climbing. I was living in Salt Lake and they have great gyms there. So it worked out.
So you mentioned before that you forgot to sign up for nationals, and not going to bring up that sort of subject necessarily, but so is it just like a pain in the ass to manage like signing up for comps and making sure you have travel plans and all that stuff and train and, you know,
and being a student?
Yeah.
I mean, I really can't complain. It's kind of like the best lifestyle I could have, probably. I mean, I'm not going to complain about having to book plane tickets and remember to sign up for comps. I don't know. It's pretty good when the comps exist. You do have to pay kind of a lot of money to go, but then usually they pay you a lot of money if you win. So that's cool.
Cool. I guess, I mean, for me, I just assume that I don't know why. I always just made the assumption that certain people were just like, they just expected you to show up or something. I don't know. It's stupid, but because it's easy to think about.
I don't go to comps for other people. I go just to have fun and compete. So
no, I guess
sometimes organizers are like, hey, like, will you come to our comp? Like, we'll put you up and comp you registration. And then I'm like, oh yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
But
I guess this is one of those things that you think about other sports. Like if the Vikings are playing the Giants, then you know that the Giants are showing up. You know what I mean? Whereas it's like you're your own kind of individual team.
Yeah. There's not a real, I mean, there's really no team structure at all for open competition. I mean, I guess there's youth teams. I was on Team ATX till I aged out. But yeah, it's very casual to be an open competitor. You just show up when you want to show up. I mean, you could do like one comp a year and then call it, or you could do like every single one and compete every weekend, which I don't recommend. I did that and it was too much.
Fair enough.
So Maya, I'm going to ask you kind of a broad question, and I mean, it's because my curiosity's piqued. What do you think the climbing community is lacking? Or what do you think the climbing community leadership is lacking? Not just in Texas, but in general, where are the areas of improvement?
I mean, the obvious answer is like diversity, equity, inclusion. There's been a lot of awareness in the climbing community this year that was previously lacking about barriers to entry, and like competing is expensive. And it's definitely kind of a rich white people sport, but it really shouldn't be, because it's literally climbing rocks. Like, that's a very basic human thing to do. And I mean, regardless, it's an outdoor sport. Everybody has or should have like equal rights and access to participate. So that's a big thing. And I think that's not, I mean, it's a lot of it is, you know, up to the leadership in the climbing community. Not that there's much organization, but like gym owners, competition organizations, people like in positions of authority or power, to, you know, actively promote that and increased representation in their hiring practices and in their, you know, affinity groups that they host and like have events and raise awareness and stuff and actually put money towards organizations that are trying to diversify the sport. Like Climbing for Change is a great one that has just been created. And, you know, there's a bunch of other ones, Brown Girls Climb. If I think of any more off the top of my head, like Color the Crag Climbing Festival, Women's Climbing Festival. Like there's all sorts of stuff, all sorts of people who are making a real effort, and supporting them is obviously like a major, major first step. But it's also up to like individual members of the climbing community to kind of recognize like we're here because, or most of us, a lot of us are here because we had that opportunity when we were young, or maybe when we were older, just to have the means and the exposure and the access and feel safe getting into the sport. That's really quite homogenous demographically. I think I was reading the demographic report. I think Access Fund or something. I don't remember which organization did it, but they made a demographic report for like 2019 or 2020. I think it was 2019. And like 85% of climbers in the US are white or something like that, which is a higher number than even I expected. It just goes to show like it's not just on the organizational leadership, which obviously they have a big role to play, but it's also on, you know, individual members of the community to show up and educate yourself, be welcoming, do good things, support all of those people who are actively making an effort and like maybe get involved somehow.
Well, I personally think by you sharing that's a form of support. So I appreciate you having that platform because your voice does get amplified, especially being a competitor and just a smart human being in general, people will follow. So much appreciated.
So you started at the Austin Rock Gym.
Yeah, I was like 10. I did their summer camp. They were like 5-day, you know, summer climbing day camp at Sarg. And I did that, and my instructor, I think his name was Carl, immediately handed my mom the like join team. At that time it was Team ARG, youth climbing team, little pamphlet thing. And my mom was like, no thanks, we're too young for extracurriculars right now. And I begged her to let me join for 3 years, and then eventually when I was 13, my parents were like, okay, for your 13th birthday you can join the climbing team, but only 2 practices a week. You can only go if you've already finished all your homework for that day, and no competitions outside of the city. And I was like, okay. And I was so stoked. And then the next year, my mom was flying me to nationals. Like, how did this happen? So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it escalated.
That's great.
Parents didn't sign up for that.
Well, to have parental support is always fantastic.
Yeah, no, they're great. I think my parents, you know, supported me in the best way possible. They never, you know, put any pressure on me. They never expected me to perform in any way. They never made me feel like I had to climb for anyone besides myself. But then whenever I asked them for support, or, you know, I want to go to this comp, I want to do that thing, I want to go to this training camp, they're always, you know, dishing it out to give me those opportunities, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, I played a lot of traditional sports in middle school and high school, and saw a lot of parents just really pushing down the sport, you know, onto their kids. And is that something that you see in the climbing community?
Oh God, so much.
Really?
Especially like increasingly now, like it kind of used to be this weird niche sport that nobody did. So the parents who let their kids do it were kind of like relaxed, like, you do your thing. But, you know, now it's becoming like kind of a real sport, especially now that this is an Olympic sport. Gosh, like it's like gymnastics or something. Like there are crazy parents who, you know, way more into it than the kid is. I've seen this happen so many times where like the kid is like high performing in like youth C or youth B, which for people that don't know about youth competition climbing is like you're 12, 13, 14. And young kids show a lot of promise, and then their coach is like to their parent, you know, hey, this kid has potential. The parent's like, oh my gosh, we have to give you everything to make you the best you can be. And then it just becomes, you know, you've seen the classic sports movie where the kid is in it for the parent, and it's just a mess. And then people burn out, or sometimes it ends up being kind of a rough road to like a happy ending where the kid like reclaims climbing as like their own thing that they do for them, or decides it's okay to just do it recreationally and like learns not to put so much pressure on themselves. But yeah, generally I've seen a lot of ugly parent-child situations, especially when the parent is coaching the kid as well. Just the over-involvement is never good. I'm very lucky that my parents were the right amount of supportive.
You do some coaching as well, no?
Yeah, I do. I do some private lessons. I used to coach pre-corona. I coached for the team at the local gym where I was going to school up in Sunnyvale. I coached for Team ATX briefly. Yeah, I've been doing private lessons for quite a while, actually, kind of off and on. It's not something that I think I'll pursue professionally, but it's a nice way to kind of interact with like the up and coming kids in the sport, spread it around a little bit, make some cash.
You know, it seems like it's always going to be something you'll have in your pocket to be able to give, both on a coaching level as well as a volunteer level. So that's pretty special.
Yeah, definitely.
So when you're done with college, is the plan to take some time and do international comps full time or to get right out there in the workforce?
Oh, I don't know. I guess we're just going to see how it goes. I don't actually even know when I'm going to graduate at this point. I took a quarter off in the beginning of the pandemic, so I've got some wiggle room. I think that I'm probably going to reevaluate like halfway through senior year. Right now I'm at the start of my junior year, so I have a while. And yeah, maybe it depends on what kind of job opportunities present themselves and like what I feel like I want to do, where I feel like I'm at with climbing compared to the rest of the field. So yeah, I don't know. Short answer is no idea, no game plan.
Fair enough. And so you're studying computer science. Is the goal to be a programmer or to?
The goal is, I don't really know. I kind of just went into it like, oh, this is fun. I was originally doing bioengineering and then I just took a couple computer science classes and thought they were really cool. So I just kept doing it. Eventually, I mean, hopefully I'll have a job in like software development or engineering of some sort. But yeah, I don't really know where it's going to take me.
Would you prefer to seek a remote position so that you can climb wherever you want as well as work?
It would be nice. I think that something I've learned about myself recently, the past like few years with all the traveling that I've done, is that I like traveling, but I also like to have like a kind of stable routine and like live in one place. You know, moving stresses me out. I definitely could not do the van life thing for more than like a year at most. And, you know, I kind of would rather have like an established place where I live and work and then, you know, maybe work part-time or have a lot of vacation time or like unpaid time off where I can go climb, travel, compete, whatever. I think a remote job might work for me pretty well during years when I'm competing a lot because I'll be traveling for a lot of the year, ideally, if things go to plan. But eventually I think that I would want to work somewhere like in a place, in a physical place. I don't think I'd want to be, you know, remote for the foreseeable future. Remote school is already, I know, I just hate it so much more than normal school. I never was that enthusiastic about school until I got to college and I actually started to really enjoy my classes. And a lot of that enjoyment is not there with the virtual classes. I just would much rather be able to like actually interact with my professors and TAs and like the other students in the class. So I think that I'd have a similar situation with a workplace. I think working by myself from my house or my van or my apartment or whatever would not be a source of long-term happiness for me.
I know you're not asking for advice, but coming from a personal chef who did meal preparation in people's homes for over half a decade and catering events, it is a very solitary life and you miss the human interaction, the synergy. And one of my favorite things about Texas State, I'm not going to mention some of them, but was to be able to interact with the students in my class. And I always went to study sessions because I'm a nerd and I used to be able to almost get some like inside beta on what to expect on the test because no one goes to study sessions that the professors would host. Was that the case at Stanford when they would have private?
Yeah.
Not study sessions, but to where you can come in the professor's office and
office hours. Yeah.
Office hours. Excuse me.
Yeah. It's, already hard to do that in person. You know, going to office hours is already something you kind of have to learn the hard way to do. And just like asking for help in general, I feel like with everything on Zoom, it's just like, yeah, there's no way. Last quarter, I think I interacted, like I had actually zero live interactions, maybe like one or two, like during lecture or something. Cause like everything's recorded, you know, it's really hard to connect with, at least for me, I'm not very good at the whole virtual socializing or collaborating thing.
Are you a pretty social person in your personal
life? Oh yeah, I'm very social. I thought that I was introverted for all of high school because I was just mad that I had to go to school. So I did not enjoy being around everybody that was there. I didn't like high school very much, and in college, like I realized I've lived in this family of five my whole life. And we interact with each other a lot, right? My parents are very, you know, family oriented. So, you know, family dinner every single night, you know, I don't think I've ever eaten a meal alone in my house. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but usually, you know, we're eating all three meals, at least with half the family every day. And I really missed having people around. I feed off the energy of people in like the general vicinity, you know, I feel like I have to interact with a lot of people on kind of not necessarily on a very like direct and individual level, but when people are around, then that's when I'm happiest, right? So moving to college and living in a dorm room by myself was kind of an eye-opening experience because I was like, wow, like I don't actually like spending a lot of time alone. I really like to be, you know, surrounded by a community, which is hard with COVID, but now I'm home with my family. So that's definitely offsetting it a bit.
What were some of the other colleges you applied to?
Gosh, let's see, bunch of ones in California, USC, Berkeley, UC Irvine, I think, Colorado School of Mines, UT.
Ooh, School of Mines. Wow.
Yeah, I think I was going to apply somewhere else in Colorado too, but then I visited it and I didn't like the campus, so I decided not to.
Got it. So did you do campus visits for all those that you applied for?
Most of them, yeah. There was, during spring break, I think my mom and I road tripped, you know, up and down the West Coast and then visited Colorado at some point too. I think it's, like personally I value like being in a location that has all the things that I want, like the weather is good. I don't know, I just need to be in a place where I feel good to do good work, which is why I love Austin so much, because you know I grew up here, the weather's great except when it's a million degrees. It's beautiful, there's a lot of natural space, and it's just, I don't know, I really like the community here.
Let me just ask real quick, what's something you think people get wrong about Texas?
I honestly think the stereotypes about Texas are pretty accurate. Like most people don't have horses, but that's about it. It's a lot of cactus. It's a lot of Republicans.
A lot of land.
Gas is cheap. I think Austin, you know, Austin's very different from the rest of Texas, but most people know that. Like if I tell people I'm from Texas, they're like, oh, you're from Texas. But if I tell people I'm from Austin, they're like, oh, you're from Austin.
Correct.
You know, and I think if there was one thing that people don't realize about Texas, it's A, how big it is. And like people are really surprised when I tell them that I live 9 hours from Waco and I'm actually not on the opposite end of the state. I'm just in the middle. And it's also like surprisingly beautiful. A lot of people are like, yeah, Texas is just a desert. But no, there's like the hill country, there's forest, there's some desert, but there's also a lot of other natural areas that are really beautiful that I think go unappreciated because people just think of Texas and they think of like a cow skull in the middle of 6,000 miles of sand
and a smashed armadillo on the highway.
When I moved here from Michigan, that's where I thought I was moving to. I didn't quite realize that there was trees and stuff. But
when a middle school friend of mine from St. Louis, Missouri was moving here, we were what, 11 or 12, they got her a book about how to be a Texan. And it was just all of the stereotypes. And so when she got here with her brothers and sister, or with her brother and sister, she's like, we were looking for the horses and where you tie them up at and the saloons. And there weren't any. I was like, well, you're in the suburbs of San Antonio. You
know? Saloons.
The saloons. Like,
most important thing you got to learn is how to use, you know, how do you, when you say howdy, y'all and y'all, those things.
Oh, that's true. Y'all, I think the usage of y'all is is extremely accurate. Like, people think that Texans say y'all. Texans do say y'all.
Yes, we do.
I think, for sure. There's been cases where I've said y'all like 3 times in one email, even. Like, it's such a part of my vocabulary, I can't stop using it. Like, it sounds weird to say you guys, or like, I don't even know what else you would say. Y'all, it's just y'all. Anyway, sometimes I like have to like reword my stuff. I'm like, I sound way too Texan.
So when I write emails, I'll write the U2TWO, you and the person's name, and I'll want to put y'all, and then I look at who I'm writing to, and I'm thinking, how are they going to look at me if I write this? But this is how we speak, and should I send like an audio clip that that shows I'm intelligent? Or because if you see y'all in certain contexts, it diminishes the level of intelligence that is like on this. To me, it can go one way or the other. But
I think I've just embraced it at this point. I don't know. Maybe I'm biased because I'm from Texas, but I know a lot of smart people that say y'all, so it doesn't have that connotation to me.
I'm with you, Maya. I just use it. I don't care. And work emails, I don't care. Y'all, whatever.
Yeah, I think for me, I was unprofessional in the beginning of my entrepreneurial career, so I feel I'm a little more sensitive to it. I'm trying to just put a better foot forward.
Yeah. But
I'm a Texan to the bone from San Antonio, and I'm really happy to be living in Austin. It was the best decision I made in my 30s, for sure.
Yeah, Austin is a great city. I am so glad that I was born here. I was sure I wanted to move away after high school. I was like, yeah, I don't want to go to college in Austin, and I don't even think I want to live here. Like, it's great. I'll come back to visit, but I don't think I want to live here. But now, like, every time I come back, I'm like, actually, I do think I might want to live here.
Well, we welcome you back if you so choose, for sure.
Much appreciated.
Absolutely. There's a lot of opportunity here for you, Maya, especially with the Texas Lady Crushers. I've definitely considered hiring you as a coach for one of our clinics, and I just haven't gotten to that point. But you are definitely on the list of what local climbers would I want to teach, and you and Selena Pang, and I can't even remember at the moment, but you're on the list.
Appreciate that.
So, I'd love to hear a story. Maybe two.
Okay.
I would love to hear a happy, funny story that, when you reflect on, brings a smile to your face, whether that's here in Texas or in the U.S. And then I would like to hear any kind of significant story where you may have had an injury or avoided a really bad injury. So maybe let's start with that one and then finish on a funny or happy story.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this summer, like I said, it's not been a great year for me with injuries, but this summer I was in Oregon windsurfing, and there's this little crag that's nearby. It's called Viento Wall, and it's kind of known for being like a bit of a hidden gem, but also a bit of a choss pile. It's cracked basalt, so a lot of chunks come off. There's some loose holds, there's some loose rock. It's very well cleaned, very well bolted. So for the most part, everything's like quite solid on the established routes. But I started going there a bunch, and I was pretty confident that everything was solid because I did a bunch of the routes there and like nothing was sketch. I wasn't wearing a helmet, which was a big mistake at that crag. And I got on this route that I guess was not as trafficked and hadn't seen a lot of traffic like since it was bolted. It was like some sort of variation of another route, I think. But anyway, I took a whip, maybe the sixth or seventh bolt, and just yanked the entire chunk that the bolt was connected to out of the wall. So like this big, like, trying like a pyramid, basically like a tetrahedron of basalt, which was like extremely sharp on all of the sides because like that's just how basalt is, came out like still firmly attached to the bolt because the bolt itself was solid. It just like pulled a big chunk off, and so then it was clipped to the rope, so it was still attached to me. So like as I fell, it like ziplined down the rope and landed on my back. Luckily, missed my spine, missed my head. Either of those situations could have been really bad. I definitely could have died if it fell on my head. It kind of, I guess, luckily, instead of just hitting me with like blunt force, kind of hit me at like an angle and sliced my back open. So I walked away with like, you know, 10 stitches and very bloody shirt, but I didn't, you know, have any lasting injuries. I basically just had to wait for it to heal before I could get back in the water, which was kind of a bummer, but I felt really lucky to be alive because I wasn't wearing a helmet and it probably missed my head by about 3 inches. I think if it had fallen, like if I hadn't been looking down to spot my landing when I swung into the wall and I had still been looking up at like the hold that I just fell off, it probably would have killed me or seriously injured me. Unfortunately, I did not take the chunk of rock home because it was very large and I wasn't about to carry anything on my back at that point. Yeah, so that was, you know, lesson learned, wear a helmet if you're climbing at a Choss Crag.
So do you think, and you know, you did, as you mentioned, you believe it wasn't highly trafficked. I don't know how much you know about bolting. I'm absolutely not trying to be patronizing. I'm just now learning about bolting. Do you think that whoever bolted it maybe didn't listen to the rock quality, or do you think it was just because of that formation?
I think that that's kind of just the way basalt is. It's really hard to tell what's solid. I mean, it looked totally solid. There was not, like, I knocked on it. I was actually hanging on it. Like, I had taken on that bolt like 4 times, and it wasn't until I whipped on it that the impact was hard enough to yank it out. So like, it didn't sound hollow, you know, it looked super solid. And I actually looked at it and I was like, man, it's really sticking out. Like, I'll check it. And I was like, oh, it's solid. It's fine. So I don't think that the person who bolted it could have known. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. I mean, maybe I'm also not an expert in that area. Like, I don't really know how to bolt. So yeah, I mean, it probably could have been tested a little more thoroughly, but again, like, I don't think it was something that could reasonably have been predicted. It was just a very freak accident.
Yeah, so at least your spidey sense did tell you to knock on it because you noticed that it was protruding a little more than maybe some of the route.
Oh, yeah, I'm just kind of paranoid about stuff breaking usually.
Is that just a natural habit of yours, or did something happen in the past that caused you to be more cautious?
No, I mean, I just, most of the time it's like, I don't want to break holds because it'll ruin the route. So I don't want to pull too hard if it's loose. But, you know, if the bolt is in it, then I obviously want to make sure the bolt is solid. And there's obviously, there's people who bolt routes, route developers are usually like really thorough and really good about that stuff because, you know, they're very experienced. They protect people's lives all the time. But there's no way of telling like whether a bolt is good or bad. Like, you can't just roll up to a crag and be like, oh yeah, I know all the bolts here are going to be totally solid without knowing that it's like really trafficked or like very established. So it's good to check. I was not worried. I did not expect the bolt to come out. Earlier that week, someone else had pulled the bolt out of the rock, like the rock crumbled and just the bolt came out. So I actually was wary of that. So I was like inspecting the bolt to make sure that it wasn't going to pull out of the rock. And it was solid. Like, it was obviously, it stayed in the rock. The rock just came with it.
I remember seeing that post and I mean, wow, just seeing you holding it almost like a prize medal. And I just thought, wow, that is surreal.
Yeah, I couldn't stop laughing. I was just like in shock. I actually got dragged on Instagram after that because I posted another picture later at like another crag that was objectively not Choss of me climbing without a helmet. And somebody's like, oh, hypocrite, you know, in the comments. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. I didn't even think about it.
It happens. Everyone has something to comment on. All right. Well, let's hear a good memory or funny story or.
Oh, gosh. There's just too many to choose from.
How about the past, I don't know, couple of years or.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's so much opportunity for that in climbing. Like, every time I go out, basically, it's like, oh, man, like, often you have this moment where you like top out a boulder and like the sun is setting and there's like, you know, your friends are like chilling on the ground or whatever and you like scent the climb, you're like, oh man, like this is the life. But I feel like I don't really have any like specific climbing anecdotes that are unusually like that differ from like everyone's experience of climbing.
Not like the guy who got his knee stuck in a crack while he was climbing with Cedar Wright and pooped his pants. No.
Yeah, actually, I have never been lucky enough to have an event like that happen to me, unfortunately.
Lucky, she says.
Yeah, no thanks. That's why I don't crack climb.
Oh my goodness. I'm scared of getting stuck in tight spaces. Claustrophobia is like a major thing for me. So watching.
Yeah, don't off with.
Well, I have off with climbed, and I have to only focus on seeing outside. I can't really spend a whole lot of time looking at the inside of the crack.
Just don't look.
I mean, I have to see what kind of gear I'm placing, which I'm very new to off with. So please don't think I'm some off with queen, because I am not. I'm new to it. But I recently got stuck in an elevator. We were, I think, like a few feet from the top, and I couldn't turn around in the elevator because I could see where the door met the floor, and I could like feel the air.
Oh.
And so it's like, it's a legitimate fear. Definitely.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So Jeremy and I talk a lot about mentorship, both together and on the podcast. How do you feel about mentorship in the community? Is that somewhere that you think we're heading in the right direction? Do we have a lot of work to do? What's your take on it?
Mentorship, like coaching, or like just
passing the
older generation,
yeah,
teaching the younger?
Correct.
Okay. I feel like we have a really good community going. Like every climber I know, you know, loves to give tips and help people who are getting into this board. I guess there is a bit of a culture of like climbing elitism, like, oh, what are these Gumbies doing, you know? But usually that's more directed at like people with bad etiquette, or people who are being reckless and endangering themselves or others, or, you know, with COVID now, like people who aren't being considerate and just kind of contributing to overcrowding or not giving people space and just kind of taking up too much space at the crag or at the gym. I do think that the lack of representation and like the lack of diversity in climbing has kind of resulted in a bit of a skewed situation for who can access like that culture of mentorship. And, you know, it's very nepotistic. There's a lot of personal connections type advantages that you can get in climbing in terms of that, and also in terms of, you know, just access to facilities, being like in the know, I guess, being invited to various comps and like training things and events. But I do think the climbing community by and large has a healthy attitude towards encouraging new people and helping shape the experience of the younger generation of climbers. I know certainly that's been my experience in comps. I've had like tons of people over the years take me under their wing and show me the ropes, so to speak, whether in competition or outside.
Who are some of the most inspiring professional climbers to you?
Oh man, I can't even, that's like some, that's dangerous game. I'm afraid I forget somebody and they're going to feel left out.
How about some of, but not limited to? Would that help?
I mean, I honestly don't know. Obviously, like the best climbers in the world, Yanya, Andra, Alex Magos, like all those guys and girls are like very inspiring to me. They're the people who are pushing like the limits of what climbers are capable of in terms of like how hard it can be, like what people could do. I think the climbing community has been, it's been very welcoming, not so much like a, you know, I never really had any like climbing heroes that I looked up to. Like, I know I get this question a lot, actually. Everybody that ever like interviews you or like asks you for like a bio or something is like, who inspires you? Like, who's your favorite professional climber? And I think one time Alex Puccio actually answered this question at a comp. Some guy asked her like, who's your favorite professional climber here today or something? And she goes,
me.
Me.
I knew it.
And I think that's like, I don't know. I don't think that, since professional climbers aren't really that glorified, as like nobody's like a celebrity in climbing, you know? It's like, sure, okay, maybe people know who you are, but it's not a big enough sport to where it's, you're like really a famous person. And I like that it's like that, because I don't really want to have to be like, oh, of all these people who I'm like vaguely friends with, this one's like the best one at climbing, so they're like the most valuable person or like the most inspiring to me, which I think is kind of, I don't, it just doesn't quite capture like the spirit of what competition or, you know, outdoor climbing is like, right?
Yeah,
I don't know of any like name that I could come up with as an answer to like, who's your climbing role model? Like, they're all my climbing role model. It's like my community, you know?
Sure. No, you make a good point. I think as I've gotten older, and I'm not trying to pull like the age card at all, but I've seen different climbers in different lights. Like, for example, I've mentioned again, Selena Pang, she's 50 years old. She's an Ashtanga yogi. She's a mom two-time cancer survivor. So the type of inspiration that I get from her is different than the type of inspiration I get from you. When I see you in the gym, you're dialed in, you're focused, you're there to climb, and that's what you're there to do. I think I had maybe a little caffeine before I met you, so I felt comfortable enough to sit down and introduce myself. But there's not many women who, I mean, you intimidate me with your skill and precision. And I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. I'm not exposed to a whole lot of comp climbers, and you've been the consistent one. And I've always been hesitant to just put myself out there and introduce myself. So yeah, for me, I guess inspiration just comes in a variety of ways. So, and you're very approachable. I mean,
thanks. I try my best.
No, you really are. And like I said, it's not often that a woman intimidates me. And I've just been so impressed with you over the years. I think I just shied away literally from introducing myself. So I think that's where I was going.
So besides Emily, what's the weirdest interaction you've had at a gym?
Falls off chair. No.
I've certainly had, oh gosh, let's look into my bag of tricks. So recently I have self-designated myself as the mask police at ABP. I think I've scolded like 6 people in like the past 3 days. There are so many groups of teenage white boys that are just in there with their mask barely covering like their top lip. Gosh, it's so annoying. Sorry, I just...
No, I'm with you.
No need to apologize. Can you say it again, please?
One time I watched a woman take her mask off of her face, sneeze, and put it back on in ABP. And I was like, are you kidding me?
And then she started climbing.
That's what that's for. Guys,
I'm sure.
So yeah, that's definitely had some awkward, hey, can you please put your mask on? I've had some people kind of like shake their heads and like at me, you know, but they always do it. I've had some situations where I remind a guy more than once. And then after that, I just stare at him until he puts it on. The other day I had a guy avoid eye contact with me for like a solid 20 minutes because he had his mask below his nose and I'd already asked him to put it on twice. And I just stared at him and he would feel me staring at him and put it back on and I would look away and then I would look back and he would have taken it back off again. I kind of feel bad being like a stickler for the rules because I really am not. I kind of think rules are made to be broken, but you know, pandemic rules are a little different. So that's a...
For sure.
Speaking point. Sometimes I have people ask me weird questions, mostly like non-climbers who are like in there on the weekend or whatever. I don't think that I've had any like super egregious interactions. I know a lot of women are harassed in climbing gyms. Guys will be like watching them or like, you know, come up to them and like try to hit on them or something. That doesn't really happen to me very much. I've been told that I'm kind of intimidating. My face looks kind of angry when I'm not actively talking to somebody. So I think I have kind of an intimidating vibe, which is kind of sad because like I like climbing with people. Like I'm a very social climber. Like when I talk to people in the gym, I like it, you know, but it is nice. And the creeps don't mess with me.
I mean, we talked in the gym before and I walked up, you were working on a problem and I was asking you about the problem. You were super intense. I'm like, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Sometimes I am really focused and want to zone in. No, sometimes I'm in the mood for more social climb.
Yeah,
I think that helped with my intro. You're sitting down. I was walking around and I was like, yes, finally.
Yeah, I was having trouble warming up. I was pretty tired that day.
Do you get approached a lot at AABP or no?
Not really. I mean, obviously now it's like at 15% capacity, so I don't usually see anyone I know in there. But I think that, I mean, both AABP and Crux and NARG, obviously, I know a lot of the members there and a lot of the staff. So I often, you know, go in there intending to climb by myself and end up having like 4 different conversations with 4 different people that I know. And like, you know,
yeah,
you know, climbing is a very social sport. Yeah. I think I definitely communicate more with people that I already know in the gym, just like, oh, hey, like climb together for a while, rather than having strangers approach me and talk to me. Although that does sometimes happen.
I was curious because all the women I climb with, they would be like, Maya's here. And I'm like, okay.
I don't know. I think Austin is a bit weird. I don't know. I've grown up here and I've been here for my whole life. So I don't really remember. I guess since when I moved away, like obviously nobody in California or in Salt Lake has any idea who I am, right? I'm just like another climber in the gym, which is kind of nice because I know that here a lot of people do recognize me And I don't really know how I feel about that. But I also don't really know the extent of it. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to know, you know. I've never experienced anyone talking shit or anything.
That's good. I mean, that's sort of what I was just trying to convey in the beginning of the conversation for those who don't know you, is I enjoy seeing a woman who stands strong and who's confident with herself, because due to societal pressures and just this mold that people feel women should be in, I feel you're one who has broken that, and it was a natural break. You can't be fake confident. It's pretty easy to see through. And
make it till you make it. I don't know. I think that works pretty well. You know, interestingly, I'm not a confident person, actually.
Really?
Growing up, I was not ever. I was very shy. I am very shy, actually. That's why I don't talk to people that I don't know in the gym very often. And I mean, I'm very social, but I don't have a really high level of social confidence. And I think that is kind of different for me when I'm climbing, because I'm very comfortable in a climbing gym. Like, I really grew up there. Like, that's been my happy place since I was 10. And I was lucky enough to grow up in a gym where I immediately knew the owners, knew all the staff. I knew everyone that climbed there. Like, I knew the youth team. Like, the most intimidating person at the gym was my coach. And the people who went there were like a dedicated and small crew of very kind and very welcoming and very supportive people. Because it was like pre, you know, commercial, like ABP and Crux, which are great. I love ABP and Crux, but there's a lot of random people in there. And I think that getting into it now would be a bit more intimidating, because there's a lot of random people in there, you know, and they're all pretty good, because as the gyms and facilities multiply, more good climbers emerge, and the average level of skill in there is much higher. So I think that being like naturally talented at climbing, to where a lot of the people in the gym saw like this little girl who was kind of just doing her thing, and like chose, instead of to like intimidate me, chose to like elevate me and support me and like make me feel like I belonged there, kind of shaped my experience of climbing gyms to be like, oh yeah, like this is like where I belong. This is my home. Certainly not in Austin. And I don't even think anywhere else have I ever walked into a climbing gym and been like, oh, there's a lot of scary athletic people in here. Like, I don't know if I really belong here. Like, maybe I should be intimidated. But like, that happens with all sorts of other sports. You go skiing and you see all these legit skiers in the lodge. You're like, whoa, like I'm in the presence of people who are way better than me, you know. I went downhill mountain biking with my brother the other day, and all these guys, like, it's my second time mountain biking ever. So like, total Gumby at that sport. And there's just all these guys that are like super aggro. And I mean, my brother told me that, you know, they're just kind of, he called them chumps. Apparently that's like his word for people that are not very experienced. But he's like, yeah, they're just like, you know, V7 bros at the gym. And I was like, oh, but they like seem so intimidating to me. Right. I don't know. I think it's interesting. Like, I forget how intimidating climbing gyms can be, because I was lucky enough to grow up feeling very, very accepted. And, you know, even now that if you walk into a climbing gym and everyone in there is better than me, which, you know, sometimes happens in like Colorado or Salt Lake and the training centers and stuff, I can still feel like I belong there and like people will support me, because that's been my experience like my whole life. And I think that's a unique experience. That's definitely not a very common experience for women, especially when you get into it, like when you're not a young child. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting that your immediate thought was that I was confident just because I'm comfortable in the climbing gym. Because I really am usually, that's not how I would describe myself.
Well, I mean, you do have to understand, I saw you in one singular form. I saw you doing one singular thing, and I saw it year after year, and I saw you grow from a distance. It's not like I was an Austin resident my whole life. So as I would come back, I would just see you stronger. I would see you just doing more. So that was where my vision came from.
Definitely. And your like impression is a common one. I think like most people are surprised when I tell them I'm shy and I don't, you know, like talking to strangers.
Well, thanks for talking to me on this platform today.
Yeah, of course.
Something that does seem contradictory to what a lot of our guests and people in the community say for new climbers is they always say, go to the gym, you'll find community. Go to the gym, you'll find somebody. And I agree with you in regards to going to the gym as a new climber, especially in a young adult or an adult, that is.
Yeah, it could be kind of intimidating.
So, yes.
I think if you go alone, it's hard.
Yes. Yes. Good clarification.
But you have to, like, that's another thing. Like, you're talking about mentorship in climbing. If you have a friend, even if they're not super entrenched in the climbing community, they don't have to be like super advanced. They don't have to be super, you know, well connected. As long as it's like somebody who feels comfortable in the community and can kind of introduce you to it, and like maybe introduce you to a couple of their friends who are in climbing, or just like bring you in there and make you feel like you have somebody in there that will support you and it's like watching out for you, makes a really big difference. And I see a lot of people doing that. Like, my brother is always bringing all of his non-climber friends into the gym. Like, oh, like, let's just go climbing, like, for fun. And if they like it, then they keep coming back. Eventually, they claim that space as their own. And then you have more climbers.
That kind of circles back to the climbing community, the climbers needing to step up as mentors and even just a small role of inviting somebody new.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't know if it's just Austin, because I haven't started climbing anywhere else, but I feel like everybody at ABP when I started, they saw that I was trying hard and everybody was super cool with it. And of course, like, I climbed on, let's say, Tuesdays and Thursdays, it was like Mondays and Wednesdays or something like that, for probably a year or two. And of course, you see the same people over and over again, because there's a lot of people that, and even the people who were much stronger climbers than I was, you know, I could say, hey, you know, how you doing today, or whatever. They may, I don't even know their names, but, like, you know, I knew them from, they're the people from the gym.
Right. Yeah. You start to recognize faces.
That's super cool.
Yeah. I think that also is something that, you know, it takes a little bit of time. So, like, you're not going to go in your first time to the climbing gym and have an experience where you're like seeing the familiar faces and you're kind of feeling at home. But, you know, even if you do go alone, you don't have anybody to go with. You go a few times, especially if you go at the same times and the same days and you go consistently, you know, you start to see people. And like I said, climbing's inherently social activity. So just pick someone that looks nice and like, oh, you mind if I work that problem with you or whatever, you know, and eventually, like, you start to form those connections naturally. So that's not to say, like, I don't think that the climbing community, especially now that there's commercial gyms and there's a lot of beginners, I don't think that it's like hostile at all. I think it's just easier to get in, like, into the community if you have somebody who's already a part of it who can be a link.
Very well said. And I know that you have a good community of friends and people who support you, as well as sponsors and local climbers. You mentioned Climbing for Change earlier. Who are some of the people and places, things that you would like to shout out as we wrap up our day?
Oh gosh, so many. I mean, obviously my parents and like my whole community that supported me since I was very young. I've had so many coaches. I'm not even going to try to name them all. So many people have helped me for free or just out of the goodness of their heart, just because they wanted to see me succeed. And that's something that's really great about climbing, is like people genuinely want to see you succeed. I have a really great group of friends in the Bay now. They're all really psyched that I'm on this podcast, so might as well shout them out. Let's see, Solomon Barth, Zoe Solis, Katie Lamb, Beck Goodlow, Kevin Parker. There's more, I'm sure.
And these friends will all be sharing this episode on their social media, right? To support.
Oh, probably, yeah.
And the cast as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Emily's always hustling.
Yeah.
So, great group of friends, parents, coaches.
Yeah. I have a few sponsors that have been really good. I've been with Evolve. Evolve was my first sponsor. They give me shoes, and I think that out of all the shoe companies that exist, are like the one with the most like worthy cause that's worthy of supporting. They make like all vegan shoes. They make a shoe for a prosthetic leg. Their athlete team is super cool, and their community is just one that I'm happy to be a part of. More recent sponsor that I've become a part of, the Tension Climbing team. They are a relatively small, slightly newer company based in Colorado. The whole team is just awesome. Just a really great community with a really great products and really good integrity. Let's see, Crafted Energy Bars actually originated in Austin. Recently made a partnership with them. I've also been with Stoked Climbing for a while. They make handmade volumes and chalk bags in Colorado. Another small, like, local company that I'm very proud to support. Let's see. Oh, I recently partnered with a Stanford startup that was founded by a couple of people who are actually like currently at Stanford. It's called Switchbacker. It's basically like Craigslist for used outdoor gear. They have like a blog that I've written a couple articles for if you guys want to check them out. You could buy, sell, whatever, interact with people who have used climbing gear, skiing gear, hiking gear, you know, camping, whatever. Whatever your outdoor thing is, they've got it. I'm excited about what they're doing too.
For sure. We're going to include all the links to every single sponsor, every single shout out you would like us to link. If you want to link your friends' Instagrams, awesome, or social media, TikToks, whatever, it's all
TikTok.
Whatever, you know, this is, again, this is your episode. This is your time to self-promote. We're so happy that you're with us. And I'm going to plug something that you were also in, and that is the Nugget Climbing Podcast. I really enjoyed that podcast. I think his name is Steve.
Steve's great.
Steven, yeah. I loved the interview. It was a great one to listen to. And I think people should listen to that as well if they haven't already.
Sure. Yeah, I still haven't listened to it. I hate the sound of my own voice, so I won't listen to this one either.
You know, we hear that a lot from guests, and when I see myself on video or hear myself, I have a really deep voice. It doesn't sound like that right now, but I think in the beginning, sometimes it sounds a lot deeper. It's a little jarring. So I think you have a great voice. I think you speak very well.
Thanks.
And anything else before we get going?
I think that's all I had in mind. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Right on, Maya. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. We're going to make sure and include all of the information that Maya provided us in the show notes, and we will see y'all next week. Bye.